From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest studio in La Crosse. Thank you very much for joining us today. Our focus today is on arts and culture in our area, particularly those organizations that have been so heavily affected by COVID-19 and the resulting the temporary shutdown and the resulting adjustment in services. And we're pleased to be joined by three organizations today that, in addition to serving our area, share another thing in common, and that is that they have all been named as recipients of some grant funding that's been made available to arts and culture organizations through the CARES Act and distributed through the state of Wisconsin. So we're pleased to be joined by them now. Joining us from Norskadalen Nature and Heritage Center is Lori Dubchak. Joining us from the La Crosse Community Theater is Dominique Lukey. And joining us from the Pump House Regional Arts Center is Tony Asher. Ladies, thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thanks for asking us.
Yes, thanks, Ezra, for asking us to be here.
Certainly, certainly. So I want to make sure, I know people in our community are familiar with much of your work, but some people will be more familiar with one organization than the other. So I want to give an opportunity right off the bat for each of you to kind of give a brief synopsis of what your organization is and what you do. So let's start with Tony at the Pump House. Tell us all about the Pump House Regional Arts Center and the work that you're doing in the La Crosse area.
Yes, so the Pump House Regional Arts Center, our name says a lot of it because we are regional. And we are arts. We are multidisciplinary. So we are located in the historic water pumping station for our community, hence Pump House name. And it's been repurposed as a fine arts center. We have three art galleries, a beautiful small theater that is actually in the process of being remodeled. We have a pottery studio and classrooms. We present theater, comedy, dance, film, literary events. We also have classes and, of course, art exhibitions by regionally known artists. And also we have a wonderful program for students grades 1 through 12.
And I remember participating in some of those workshops as a child, and I know I've been to many events at the Pump House over the years. I've also been a visitor to Norskadalen, many people have. And why don't we hear now from Lori Dubchak, who is with Norskadalen Nature and Heritage Center. Lori, tell us a little bit about what goes on at Norskadalen.
A lot of education happens at Norskadalen. There's an awful lot that we can learn from the history and from the environment, from those who immigrated and settled in this area. And so we have a visitor center that has three galleries in it that tell the immigration story. And then we have 400 acres of natural wooded area with 9 miles of trails. And we have an authentic homestead. All the buildings have been moved in from less than 10 miles away from Norskadalen. So these are the homes and the buildings and the barns and the hen house and the outhouse and the spring house that were actually built and used by those who settled this area in the late 1800s. And what we do a lot of is provide education because, you know, history gives us hope for tomorrow as much as it helps us know who we are and where we came from. And then to combine that with the natural environment that supports it so beautifully and that has honestly been a balm to many of us at this point in time. Truly a privilege for me to be there and to interact with all the guests and all the wonderful staff that we have.
And Dominique Lukey is with the La Crosse Community Theater. So tell us a little bit about the work that you do. I know much like Lori was talking about with what Tony was talking about with the Pump House, it's kind of in the name. The community theater, obviously you stage theatrical productions, but talk about your role in the La Crosse community.
Sure. Oh my gosh, my role is a little bit of everything these days, from grant writing to marketing to staging never before seen events with a drive-in that we had recently. You name it, it needs to get done. I will help you do it, or find someone who has that talent and get them to help us get that achieved.
So in a typical year, how many productions are you doing? And I mean, COVID aside, let's you know, pick it like 2019. How many productions do you guys do?
We were doing about 10 shows a year, and that would be a variety of musicals, comedies, dramas. We have two theaters. We have our main stage, our proscenium theater, the Licky, and then we have a veteran studio theater, which is our Black Box. And we would generally do six main stage shows. We had a show that was for our youth that would be performed by them. We would also do a touring show that we would take to numerous schools throughout La Crosse and the surrounding areas. And then new last year was the Penguin Project, which is a production that makes children with special needs the stars. And they are joined by a peer mentor who is there to offer support and offer friendship and just make sure that they are having the best experience and being the best they can be in that role. So that was actually going to be one of our next shows when COVID hit. So we're very excited to get our season back and to have some degree of normalcy again.
So we're talking about COVID-19's effect on the arts and cultural providers in our area. And obviously March comes, closures happen, and everything changes. But even now, things are very different, even though people are allowed to offer services and allowed to do certain things. Things remain quite a bit different than they were at this time last year. So let's talk about just how drastic some of those things were. Tony, when you think about what's going on at the Pump House, what has been the biggest change that you've had to find a way to deal with?
Our performing arts, of course, were very hard hit. We first tried postponing things and rescheduling things, and then it became obvious that things just had to be canceled for the foreseeable future, although we hope that that's going to turn around. So not having performing arts was probably one of the really things that hit us very hard. Obviously, we had shows in production, some things we'd worked on already for 2 years, and it was pretty heartbreaking to bring those things to a close. Our galleries, our visual arts, we've been able to adapt, and we've only missed one show so far. And other than that, we've been able to keep to our schedule. The artists are bringing in new work. We're installing it. We're open by appointment, and we have a limited capacity. We try to welcome only one household at a time, is our goal. And but we've been able to stay open, and we also are offering carryout dine-in, which is a new program we've developed. You can pick up your carryout dinner from a local restaurant and reserve the gallery for your household, get a couple or a family, and you will be the only people in the building other than a staff member. So you can safely dine in the gallery. We'll set up the table for you, light a candle. You can enjoy your dinner, enjoy the artwork, and feel very safe in that. So that's been a really new experience. I'm sure the others, too, we have all created new arts experiences. We're delivering things online. We have clay classes, virtual classes, and projects you can pick up and take home and then follow along with written or video instructions. So we've continued to provide arts experiences, but just delivering them in ways that are accessible during this pandemic.
Lori, Norskadalen is, people think about it, the vast property that's out there and the space and the outdoors. And I know some of the things that you offer, the educational opportunities, are inside of those historic buildings that you talked about. But there's a good amount of space to roam around there as well. Has that allowed you to continue to do some of the things that you normally would have done, or how have you had to make adjustments?
Well, very similar to Tony, you know, we had all kinds of things on the books for 2020. I mean, we had bus tours coming from all over the Midwest with hundreds of people each time. We normally serve about 1,700, 1,800 students in the springtime alone. And of course, school's canceled, so field trips didn't happen, you know, things like that. Weddings needed to be postponed or rescheduled or downsized, all kinds of different things. We use our property in so many different ways that so much of it had to stop. Before the first shutdown happened in March, we literally opened the trails up at no cost to families in the area. We just asked that they let us know they're there so we could get a guest count, you know. And we had people coming from people who had never been to the property before, who were scared to death to be inside a building anywhere, and they could bring their kids and they could run on a trail, they could run in the meadow, they could see. You know, this was early March, you know, so that it wasn't like they could go barefoot in the creek. They could see the creek, you know. And that, I think, was a new experience for a lot of people. And then, of course, we had to shut the gates, and that was really difficult. But as things like golf courses were able to open and venues like that where people could safely be outside and follow new parameters, we worked very closely with the health department, the county health department, and to be sure that maybe we could open the same way with parameters in place and all kinds of stuff. So we did. We were able to do that. It's, again, very similar to what Tony was saying, where we'd have reservations and let us know how many people are coming and, you know, pay us over the phone, and then we'd leave all the maps and everything outside in an envelope, different things like that. But that really, it allowed people a new place to go, so that there was a sense of, okay, this isn't so bad. We're going on an adventure all the way to Coon Valley, which, you know, if you live on the north side of La Crosse, that's quite a hike, you know. So we had a lot of new visitors with that. And then as it became obvious that we were not going to be able to open the historic buildings because it's impossible to sanitize artifacts. You know, I mean, if you go into the Ingham House, for example, automatically everyone picks up something. Whether they should or not, it's another conversation, but they do. And of course, if it's 150 years old, you can't put Lysol on it, you know. So it became very apparent that none of our tours could happen. None of our volunteer docents could join us. Again, most of them are in the susceptible age range. So what to do? And so we had to adapt everything to either be self-guided and outside. We got a grant from the Wisconsin Humanities Council that allowed us to develop a cell phone tour that has been hugely successful. That one was so well received that we were able to use the same platform to develop a second one. And then we were able to develop, for instance, we have a troll trail, and, you know, in Norwegian folklore, we have trolls and we have Nisa, and they're just everywhere. And we were able to find them on the troll trail and put them together as for the trolls and the Nisa. And the children have absolutely loved, and so have the seniors, you know, because you'll be walking on the trail and all of a sudden you'll see a troll in the tree. And, you know, so we've had to be creative in our learning and providing education in ways that we wouldn't have otherwise. We have adapted our school programs to be available online. We've gotten very strong feedback from that. I really think that the schools right now are completely overwhelmed and trying to adjust to everything, and every day is different. So we're hopeful that after the first of the year, you know, that'll calm down a little bit, and the virtual programming will be a bigger benefit to the schools. And then again, we just got a grant from the American Scandinavian Foundation to take all of our heritage classes online, which means we'll be able to, excuse me, to develop programming for rose mulling, and for lefse making, and for Hardanger embroidery, for regular embroidery, for crocheting, and for some other of the folk arts, the traditional folk arts from Norway, to be taught generation to generation, just as they always have. But since generations can't be together right now, we're going to do it virtually. And that'll be a new experience for all of us, I think. So, you know, we've made the best adjustments that we could. There's still more to come. And I think, you know, having made these adjustments, that even once we can be in the same room again or in the same event, or we're willing to be in a larger group, I think we'll still be able to build on this multifaceted platform, right, and reach larger and larger audiences to still educate people.
That's Lori Dubchak from Norskadalen. We're also talking to Dominique Lukey of the La Crosse Community Theater and Tony Asher from the Pump House Regional Arts Center. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Our conversation will continue in just a moment. If you'd like to learn more about our program, you can find all the information as well as past episodes available to stream on demand. It's on our website at wpr.org/newsmakers. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studio, joined today by Dominique Lukey, by Tony Asher, and by Lori Dubchak, and we're talking about the various arts organizations that they are involved in. La Crosse Community Theater, arts and culture organizations, I should say. La Crosse Community Theater, Pump House Regional Arts Center, and Norskadalen Nature and Heritage Center. And we're talking about how it has been dealing with COVID-19 and its effects. And I've been taking some notes. I've heard some interesting things. Of course, we're going to be coming back to Norskadalen and talking about these cell phone tours. I definitely want to hear more from the Pump House about the idea of bringing your to-go food and instead of sitting in some random parking lot eating it, being able to come into a gallery space and enjoy that way. But one of the things that caught my ear early on, Dominique, you mentioned doing a drive-in theater production, and I was able to attend that show. It was a great show, and I want you to talk about how did you get that idea to have a drive-in theater production, and what did it take to make that happen?
Well, it is actually something that a lot of theaters around the country were trying out over the spring and summer months. And one of the benefits of those theaters is some of them were in the South and had better weather, let's say. The other benefit that those theaters had is they had their own parking lot. So at La Crosse Community Theater, I mean, you use the parking ramps or you park in the street. So we had to take a little bit more time to figure out where could we put up a production like this. And fortunately, Ultra Financial is one of our longtime supporters, and their main offices in Onalaska has ample parking space. And they let us basically take over for about a week and a half to set up an outdoor stage and put on a show that was roughly 35-40 minutes. So it does take a lot. I discovered we had to get permission from the city of Onalaska to hold that kind of event. We had to find volunteers to help us usher the cars in and then just really survey the lot because of the landscaping, We were at a bit of an advantage because there was a natural incline. So we were able to set up our stage at one end of the parking lot, and then the first row was lower elevation, and then it got higher and higher. So even if you had, say, an SUV parked in that first row, if you were parked in the second because of the elevation, you could still see over the car and onto the stage. But there were some trees we had to work around. They had some very pretty landscaping over there. So we were only really using one half of the parking lot, but it worked pretty well. We really wanted to encourage social distancing. So instead of having the actors' microphones connect to speakers on stage, we had them connect to a radio transmitter. So people literally tuned in to the actors through their car radios, and we're able to get the sound that way. And yeah, it was a fun show. We did selections from David Ives, all in the timing. It reminds me of Seinfeld just because it's so witty, and a little bit more adult. But I would do it again in a heartbeat. And who knows? I mean, if things continue as they have been, maybe that will be something that we look into later this spring and summer.
So speaking of social distancing, as I was watching that show, I noticed most of the cast had roles in each of the three one act shows that you did. And yes. And the total I mean, were there four people in the total cast or just three? Anyway, it was a very small cast. Was that done intentionally to help facilitate social distancing?
When we were in the planning stages for All in the Timing, we were still following the guidelines of the Cooley Compass, and we were in the red, which meant that I believe indoors you could have less than 10 people. And the executive director of the Weber Center felt uneasy with even having the staff in the building. So when it came to trying to put on a production, we were thinking, how can we do this when we're trying to limit exposure? So we did decide that this would be an in-house production. So we knew Mary Kate, our patron services manager, was a talented actress herself. Her husband was an actor, so it's like, okay, there's one. We knew the show we wanted to do had some romantic instances, and we thought this would be a way that we could still stage those believably without having to worry about social distancing. You know, it's kind of hard to kiss someone from 6 feet apart.
It is, isn't it?
And then, yeah, I mean, it's a talent. but I was directing the show. And I also am married to an actor, so it's like, okay, we have our three actors. We are kept between two families. Originally, I was trying to stage manage the show, too, and that just is impossible. You cannot be watching your actors while also being into the script. So we did recruit the wonderful Grace Reines to be our stage manager. But, I mean, that was really it. So as much as possible, I tried to keep Dustin away from the other actors, or at least 6 feet apart with all of the staging. And then with Mary Kate and Lucas, since they were part of the same household, that wasn't as much of a concern. And the other benefit too is we knew that we were performing outside. So you yeah. have a little bit more leeway there as well.
It was very interesting to watch, and it's very interesting to hear sort of the behind the scenes decision making process about who, you know, who's cast in what kind of roles, and how different that is from normal circumstances. Lori, you were talking about at Norskadalen, some of the ways that you've been able to move some of your offerings online, and you've gotten some grant funding that's helping with that. I was interested in this idea about a cell phone tour. Talk about what is a cell phone tour, and how can I experience that?
Well, again, it's just that. It's a tour that you guide yourself through using your cell phone. And we actually have two of these cell phone tours now. The first one is called Moving History, which was funded by the Wisconsin Humanities. And the second one is Homestead Online 2. So for Moving History, of course, all of our buildings were moved in to the property by a group of volunteers. And I can't imagine picking up a house and moving it 10 miles down the road, you know. So as they worked on all of this, they became amazing friends, and they were all volunteers, and there was no money involved. And, you know, they all had competitions to see who had the most Band-Aids on their hands by the time the day was done, you know, that kind of thing. And, of course, the women would always bring in meals and what have you, and who had the best break. I mean, all of that happened. And at some point in time, it was all captured in video form. And so what we did with the grant from the Wisconsin Humanities was we went through the videos and we took out the vocal parts. So we have these people, many of whom have passed on, talking about how they moved the Ingham house, or how they put the stones back together in the spring house, or how they got the shingles on the cow barn, and how they were glad their mother didn't see them on that roof at that point. You know, so they're telling these stories. There's a lot of history with it. You get the Norwegian brogue in there because, again, the people who did this were either immigrants themselves or the first generation in this country from immigrant parents. So it's an amazing combination of stories and ethnic culture and volunteerism. And what you do when you get this brochure is there's a main number to dial on your cell phone, and then you literally follow the directions. You know, you stop at, there's a map in the brochure, so it tells you if you want to hear story one, you stop at this building and press one on your phone. When you're ready for story two, you go to this building and press two on your phone, and you get to hear all of this. I think that particular tour has 12 or 13 stops on it. I'd have to look again to be sure. But it was so well received that we took our regular tour. If you were there with the tour guide, a docent, to give you a tour of the homestead, we took all of that information that a regular docent would give you, and we put it on another cell phone tour. And this is called Homestead Online 2, because you dial the same number on your cell phone, and it gives you the choice between going to line 1 for moving history or going to line 2 for the homestead. And then again, it directs you to all the various buildings and tells you which stories that you can hear and the information that you can receive. And they have been so well received by our guests. We hear from some of them that they not only enjoyed it when they were there in the homestead itself, but then they get home and they can listen to it again because it's their cell phone.
Are there limited number of tickets available for a thing like this, or are you limited in how many guests you can receive at a time? Is this something that people should reserve ahead of time, or can they just show up at Norskadalen during, you know, when it's open and
right.
purchase?
Yeah,
it
no,
way?
They can. No, they just pay admission, and we give them the brochure if they so desire. You know, we've got a number of different things they can do while they're there. So if they pay admission and they have access to everything that's available. We'll give them the brochure for both of those tours, as well as a couple other tours at the same time. And, you know, it's a web-based platform, so we can literally thousands of people accessing these tours at the same time. The interesting thing is that, for instance, we have members who, of course, have moved to the far reaches of the country, and people have sent them. For instance, we have a daughter in the area, and she has sent the brochures to her parents who have moved to, shall we say, warmer climates. The parents have accessed the tour from Florida, Arkansas, Arizona, wherever they happen to be, and felt like they were still connected to a very beloved place. So it's been a tremendous outreach. It's been a tremendous tool for us in this time. And again, we've still been able to fulfill our mission of educating and interpreting the history and natural resources. So it's been really a godsend for us.
That's Lori Dubchak from Norskadalen Nature and Heritage Center. We're also talking today to Dominique Lukey of the La Crosse Community Theater and Tony Asher of the Pump House Regional Arts Center. I'm thankful for all of their joining us today, and our conversation will continue in just a moment. As I mentioned before, our website is wpr.org/newsmakers, and you can do more than just find previous episodes of our program there as well. There's contact information there if you have an idea for a show that you would like to hear in the future, or if you have a question that you'd like us to find an answer to, you can find all of our contact information there on our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our show continues in just a moment. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. From Wisconsin Public Radio, it's Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studios. Thank you very much for joining us today. We're talking about arts and culture and those nonprofit organizations that have been so dramatically impacted by COVID-19. Tony, you were talking about, Tony Asher from the Pump House, you were talking about a little bit of the history of your organization. You're in literally a former water pumping station that you've converted into a theater space, into a gallery space, a museum. You're active in the community in different installation art projects and all kinds of different things. What has been the sort of craziest idea that you've had to try to come up with as you figure out how to navigate this new world that COVID-19 has kind of introduced us to?
Well, I'm sure along with the Lori and Dominique, we find every day brings something new, a new challenge, and you figure it out and you start to implement that new way of doing something, and then it changes again. So we can come up with a lot of different ideas. One of our programs that we have at the Pump House is a film society, and that is a group that it's a membership organization. So you pay a membership fee to belong. And as a member, you're entitled to attend any one of our film events, and we show international films that address some social issue. We have an expert in the field, on the topic of the film, there to do a 1 or 2 minute introduction. For example, we had a film about illegal immigration, and we had an immigration attorney present at that event. And then afterwards, we gather in the gallery for dinner and discussion. So it's been a wonderful event. We've been at capacity for several years. And now with COVID, we can't obviously gather for a film and dinner. And we thought, well, we'll change it to a virtual cinema. So we did this by keeping our same model that we are a membership organization. You join the Pump House Film Society, which is now virtual cinema. And that membership entitles you to attend virtually any one of the films we select. And we also have some online meetups, and we pick someone every month who wins a bottle of wine, and we share recipes that are themed with the movie. And the selection committee also recommends other films that people might want to watch. So you have these perks. And we thought, okay, we've got this figured out. There's lots of people that do virtual cinema. This, you know, we'll just implement it. Well, we didn't realize that in general, when you have a virtual cinema, the way it works is you log on and you pay them to screen the movie. You don't have like a pass that just allows you to see every movie that film club has up. Usually you have to pay for each one. So we began to learn about licensing and different things as it applies virtually. We'd always obtained non-theatrical licenses for our film screenings, but this was a whole new thing. So we had to work with several different distributors before we were able to obtain licensed films in the manner that our film club is used to seeing them. Mm-hmm. So they get to see everything for free. Well, it took a lot of learning and educating, but we did get it up and going. And after the first one, I was making a report to the distributor, and I was kind of embarrassed that we had so few people actually log on and watch the movie. And afterwards, the distributor replied to me that we had done phenomenally. He said, most of these film clubs have very few people watch. Sometimes, I mean, it's not unusual, he said, for people to have less than five people see one of their screenings. And so we've been talking that we have perhaps come up with a winning model for virtual cinema of having a film club in this model that we have. So we've been kind of excited about that.
Yeah. You talked a little bit about being disappointed with how many people might have been able to participate versus how many people might have come to a live event in person or something like that. And that brings me just to another thing. The reality is with fewer people coming through the gates at a small nonprofit organization, that affects the bottom line. How are you guys doing at the Pump House in terms of your normal expectations versus now when it comes to meeting your financial obligations and looking at the year ahead?
Now, supporting a facility, of course, is a large expense that continues regardless if you have 50,000 people a year in or 5,000. So one thing we've turned to a lot are grants. We've been writing a lot of grant applications, and we're really grateful for the support we've received through the NEA, the Wisconsin Arts Board, Wisconsin Humanities Foundation, and several other funders. So we're always looking for any possible support we can find. This is one area where being multidisciplinary has perhaps helped us because we are a venue, so the entertainment and venue grants are applicable to us. As I mentioned, the humanities grants, the arts grants, so visual and performing arts, we are looking at every opportunity. Of course, we turn to our regular funders and ask for their support. And we are pinching every single penny, as I'm sure everyone is. The heat might not be quite as warm as it was before, and every light is turned off, and you just really watch to be a Vic now. As economical as possible.
Another aspect of keeping in touch with those finances and is sponsorships. I know Dominique at the community theater. It's not just ticket sales, butts in seats, so to speak, but you're selling sponsorships in all of those programs and fewer shows, fewer programs. How are you guys doing?
That was my main project over the summer, was to reach out to the various businesses and organizations that would typically be sponsoring LCT productions. And basically the way we had to approach it this year was just to try to sell everyone on an idea of, hey, here are the things that we think we could possibly do, with the understanding that we are experiencing something that no one has ever experienced in our lifetime. And as we have found, like, what is true today may not necessarily be true tomorrow. And the thing to remember is that everyone is going through this in some way, shape, or form. So there has been a lot of understanding. And we are so fortunate that most of our sponsors were still able to say, yes, we're going to still partner with you. We're going to still support you this year. Not everybody could, again, because everyone is facing a challenge too. But I mean, you just have to do what you need to ensure that you're still here when this is all over and we come to the new normal, and we're very understanding of that and are rooting for those organizations as well and can't wait to partner again with them in the future. So, but yeah, it's a challenge. It's different. And the main thing is you just have to remember to be flexible and adaptable.
Yeah. And I think everybody's learning a little bit of that during COVID-19. I mean, you know, it's people on my Zoom calls through the week are used to, you know, seeing me in a baseball hat on random days, because that's just how life is going today. You know, we've got, you know, we've seen videos all over, a video of somebody that was on a news program the other night and their like teenager walked into the room and then just slowly backed out as soon as they realized they were on the camera. So I think we're all like learning how to deal with changing expectations, just being understanding of meeting people where they are and understanding that we all got to do what it takes to get through this. When it comes to Norskadalen, Lori, I know at the community theater they have a certain number of seats and they got to sell tickets to a certain number of programs. I know at the Pump House, you know, they have a show. They expect a certain number of people to come through and see the show or to sit in the theater to watch a production there. At Norskadalen, how does that work? What does it take to make ends meet at an organization like yours?
It takes a lot of really dedicated members, and in this instance, as always, I mean, before this year of pandemic, we had three catastrophic floods in less than 2 years' time period, and the devastation from that we were just barely getting on top of, and then of course we've got a pandemic. In fact, I sent a letter to the membership when we had to shut down in late March, early April, and I said, you know, golly, it's been three floods and a pandemic. I mean, what else do you say but golly? But our members have supported us and stepped up every single time and been there for us as much as they can, which I am thankful for, whether it was financial support, emotional support, calling to say, are you okay today? They do that a lot, which is really very helpful. And then again, it's normally, on a normal year, Norskadalen's got a major event almost every month, you know, whether it's the school programs in May in June, or Midsummerfest in June, or the Candlelight Snowshoe Hike in February, or music in the summer, which happens every Wednesday night most of the summer, or, you know, Twilight Tour, Ghoulies and the Coolies, any number of group tours, bus tours, old-fashioned Christmas, all of those things. And it takes every single one of those events and the revenue that they bring in order to help us make those ends meet. It takes all the tour groups that come through. It takes all the weddings that book the shelter or the arboretum in order to make things happen. And so much of that, you know, if you look at the financial statements and compare this year to next year, it's just frightening, you know. But again, we're admission based. We've got all kinds of people who have never been to Norris-Cadallan before coming down because they can safely be outside. They can safely have a family outing and get out of their house and do something they've not done before. And so our admissions actually are doing quite well. Our members, again, with donations have stepped up. There have been a number of opportunities through, of course, the PPP, Wisconsin Humanities that got funding through the National Endowment for Humanities, and that has been a godsend and a half. The current funding through the Department of Administration, which is again part of the CARES Act, that once is distributed, again, will allow us to make sure we can finish this year in the black. But it's taken absolutely everything to kind of, you know, there's always a seesaw with. You either have it, you don't, you're never sure. That seesaw is never, it's never balanced. It's always a little in flux. And this year, the seesaw had a completely new pattern to it. And it's been our members and our donors, and then it's been funding from organizations like Wisconsin Humanities and a variety of other places that have helped us pull it all together.
That's Lori Dubchak from Norris-Cadallan, also on the call today, Tony Asher from the Pump House, and Dominique Lukey of the La Crosse Community Theater. We'll be back to get some information about how you can participate in what these three organizations are doing in the months ahead and in the coming new year. And we will get that information after our last time out right here on Newsmakers. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. From Wisconsin Public Radio, it's Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall at our studios at the University of Wisconsin La Crosse. I'm pleased to be joined today by Dominique Lukey from the La Crosse Community Theater, Tony Asher from the Pump House Regional Arts Center, and Lori Dubchak from Norris-Cadallan Nature and Heritage Center. And we're talking about arts and culture organizations and the struggles that they've faced and how they've overcome them during this COVID-19 pandemic. In particular, these three organizations have been the recipients or will be the recipients very soon of grant funding through the CARES Act distributed through the state of Wisconsin. And I'm sure they are very grateful for that, and we're grateful for having them on the show. I want to make sure that everybody gets a good opportunity to take advantage of our audience, who are all, you know, artistically and culturally minded people here on public radio, and let them know what's coming up. So let's start with the Pump House. Tony, I know you said that you've got some interesting dining opportunities affiliated with the Pump House, and I'm sure you've got shows on that are either going on right now or coming up. Why don't you take a minute to just give us kind of an overview of what's going on at the Pump House and how people can get involved?
So we do have art exhibitions in our galleries continuing to change on schedule. You have an opportunity to reserve the main gallery for your private dining experience and pick up your carry-out dinner from a local restaurant and bring it in, and we will have a table and candle ready for you, and you can enjoy your dinner and the artwork safely as the only people in the building. And we also have a virtual cinema. All with our exhibits, we are open. The building is open 9 to 5 by appointment. And we also have an audio tour that you can listen to. The artists describe the artwork that you are seeing while you're here. We have classes. We have private pottery lessons in our studio. And we also have take-home projects that you can pick up. We've had lots of parents very grateful for those. Over these long weekends and times, great projects to do with the kids. And we have worked out a no contact process for you to pick up the supplies, return them, we fire it for you, and then you pick up your completed project. So there's always lots of things happening at the Pump House, and you can find all of our events online. Our website is thepumphouse.org, or give us a call at 608-785-1434. We're always happy to talk with you. And we'd like to remember that it is our artists that will tell the story of this time in the future. It will be the story of the pandemic will be told through songs, dances, artwork created by our artists today. So please join us in supporting our artists.
And heading to Norskadalen for a little outdoor adventure, Lori Dubchuk, what if people want to come and enjoy what there is to see and to learn at Norskadalen? How do we do that, and what's going on?
Well, the next thing that we're adjusting for the current circumstances is our old-fashioned Christmas. It's typically a traditional Norwegian event with a full-blown dinner and all kinds of things happening. But of course, we can't do that this year. We can't have that many people inside. So we're developing a Yule market, which is a Norwegian Christmas market. It's going to be outside. It will be in our shelter. We have a variety of vendors who will be there that create handcrafted goods for you to purchase as gifts, but just because you like it yourself. There'll also be things out on the property. There'll be a Yule log hunt. There'll be scavenger hunts. There will be a place where your little one can write a letter to Father Christmas. Father Christmas is the Norwegian version of Santa Claus, and I'm understanding that Santa is going to have some difficulty getting everywhere to hear from kids this year. So if you want to come and write a letter to Father Christmas, join us for old-fashioned Christmas. And that would be, find the details for that on our website, which is www.norskadalen.org. NORSKEDALEN.org.
And Dominique Lukey, the Lacrosse Community Theater, what's going on there? Any more drive-in theaters in our future?
Not a drive-in theater, but we are actually trying a new venture. We are going to be presenting Miracle on 34th Street in the style of a 1940s radio broadcast, and it actually will be broadcast on the radio. On December 12th at 6 o'clock, you can tune in to Wisdom, I believe that's 1410 a.m., and hear a wonderful production with actors who are so talented. We have six actors who will be playing all of the different characters. I believe there's somewhere between 30 and 40. And then we'll have a full team that is making the handmade sound effects. We'll be incorporating the fun and silly radio jingles that you used to hear all the time. So it should just be a really unique experience that brings you back to a simpler time, a happier time. So we're really hoping that the community tunes into that. And something else that we're doing with this production to make it a little bit more special is we are going to be trying out our live streaming capabilities. We will also be creating a video on demand version of the production. So basically we'll be video recording a performance and then also interviewing members of the cast and members of the production team and editing it so it's more kind of like a documentary where you'll see the show, but you'll also get to see what happens behind the scenes and what went into the making of the production. And we're hoping to offer that as a video on demand the week of Christmas.
So how can people find ticket information for that or information about how to stream that and how to participate?
Sure. Well, we did announce auditions, and we actually just finished up auditions last night. So I'm very curious to see what the cast list, how that turned out. So really, the radio is free, at least at this moment. So you can tune in at your on December 12th. And then we're hoping to add the ticket information to our website a little bit closer to Christmas. Our website is lacrossecommunitytheater.org. But you can always find what we're up to by either going to our website or following us on Facebook or on Instagram, LCT Life on Stage.
Well, so. I can't thank you all enough for joining us today. And of course, I know I'm not alone in thanking you for what your organizations do in our communities throughout every year, but especially this year as it's been so difficult. Our guest today, you just heard from Dominique Lukey from the Lacrosse Community Theater. Dominique, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
We heard also from Lori Dubchuk of Norskadalen Nature and Heritage Center. Lori, thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me.
And Tony Asher is with the Pump House Regional Arts Center. Tony, thank you so much for participating. participating in today's show.
Yes, thank you so much for having me as well.
Absolutely. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our studios here in La Crosse. If you'd like to hear a previous program or if you missed part of today's show and like to listen to it again, you can find all of our shows on our website, WPR.org/newsmakers. There are several opportunities each week to hear Newsmakers. Our show originates at 10 o'clock on Friday morning on the Ideas Network 90.3, and we repeat our show at 7 o'clock in the evening on Friday on La Crosse's WLSU 88.9, and again at 5 a.m. Saturday morning, so set your alarms, on 88.9 WLSU. For Dawn Jewell and John Davis and the rest of the La Crosse staff, I'm Ezra Wall. Please join us again next time for another Newsmakers right here on Wisconsin Public Radio.